The headlines this hour: a major U.S. military base in northeastern Syria comes under a rocket attack. No casualties reported yet. Gas prices are rising across Europe as Russia further slashes its gas supply to the continent amid continued tensions over the war in Ukraine. And the U.S. Justice Department is reportedly examining former President Trump's role in last year's Capitol attack as part of the election-related criminal probe. Thanks for joining us. Several rockets from an unidentified source have been fired at one of the largest U.S. military bases in Syria's northeastern province of Hasaka. Syrian media says one rocket shell landed inside the U.S. base in the oil-rich town of Shadad, and the rest fell in its vicinity. People in the city and the surrounding areas also heard loud explosions from the military site and saw smoke rising out of it. No casualties have been reported yet. Prior to the attack, Washington had sent two convoys carrying artillery and armored vehicles to the base. The U.S. has stationed hundreds of troops and military equipment without the permission of the Syrian government. Damascus has repeatedly called on the U.N. to end U.S. unsolicited military presence in the country. The Algerian foreign minister has concluded a two-day official visit to Syria. He met top officials in an effort to bridge gaps in relations between Syria and some Arab countries and to enhance bilateral economic cooperation. Muhammad Ali has the details from Damascus.
Algerian Foreign Minister Ramtane Al-Amamra has met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus and handed him a letter from Algerian President on bilateral relations and preparations made for the upcoming Arab League summit in Algeria. Assad said the Arab League is the mirror that reflects Arabs' status quo, asserting what matters to Syria is the content and result of joint Arab action rather than the form. Amamra said Syria is a basic element on the Arab arena and that the Arab world needs Syria, not vice versa. He stressed that Algeria will remain standing beside and coordinating with Syria regarding Arab and international developments during its presidency of the Arab League summit. The top Algerian official also held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart. The two sides agreed to boost economic cooperation and establish a joint higher committee for this purpose. However, the main topic was how to bridge gaps in the relations between Syria and some Arab countries, as Algeria is exerting efforts to bring back Syria to the Arab League.
If you ask Arabs, does Syria have a legitimate seat in the Arab League? The answer would be yes. Is Syria's absence from the Arab League in the benefit of any side? The answer is no. Syria's absence harms joint Arab action. Are there means to solve this situation? This is the core of my consultations with Arab brothers. We are optimistic.
Miqdad asserted that the issue is beyond just attending or not attending the Arab League summit.
We coordinate with Algeria and some Arab countries, regardless of Syria's membership in the Arab League. What is important now is to coordinate policies and come out with conclusions that serve Arab goals. Syria supports all measures that renew Arab stances, solidarity, and an Arab understanding of importance of joint coordination between all of us to face mutual challenges.
Algeria is one of the few Arab countries that remained supportive to Syria during its crisis, as it condemned terror and rejected economic sanctions on Syria.
This is the first official visit of an Algerian foreign minister to Syria in years. It comes as Algeria strives to unite Arab states and enhance Arab-Arab relations ahead of hosting the upcoming Arab League summit in November. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that his country has successfully challenged the West's long-standing attempts to promote the idea of the separation of religion from state. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Islamic Republic has targeted the focal point of the Western civilization, which he noted is the separation of religion from state. The leader said that Western powers, supported by the Zionist regime and its capitalists, are angry at Iran's advancement. He underlined that the Islamic Republic has not only made their anti-Tehran plots futile, but has proven that there is no contradiction between religion and development. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks while addressing a group of Friday prayers leaders. Iran's intelligence ministry has released new details following the arrest of the members of an Israeli-linked terrorist group who had been planning an act of sabotage in Iran. The ministry says the detainees are members of the Kamala terrorist group and were introduced by the Israeli spy agency Mossad. The Iranian ministry says the terrorists were seeking to explode a critical center of Iran's military industry, but their plot was foiled by the country's intelligence unit. The group had employed the most complicated methods to implement its plot and had brought a wide range of arms to Iran under the cover of other stuff. According to the ministry, all of their weapons and equipment were captured. On Saturday, the ministry announced the arrest of the group. Time now for the news review of this bulletin. Gas prices are soaring across Europe as Moscow slashes gas supply through the single biggest pipeline to Germany. Gas prices have increased by 9%, inching closer to an earlier all-time high. The Nord Stream 1 pipeline that brings Russian gas to Europe via Germany is now operating at less than a fifth of its normal capacity. Russia previously cut flows through the pipeline to 40% in June, citing maintenance work. The European Union says Moscow is using energy as a weapon against European countries. The Kremlin, however, says the disruption in gas supply is due to the bloc's sanctions against Russia.
We know that now the technical possibilities for pumping gas have decreased and narrowed. Why? Because the maintenance process of various units is extremely difficult due to the restrictions and sanctions that Europe, namely the European Union, has introduced.
The Russian official said the EU sanctions have made his country impossible to carry out maintenance work on the pipeline. He also said that Moscow cannot ensure gas supply if the EU hinders the process itself. Europe is heavily relied on Russian gas and imported 40% of its natural gas from Russia till last year. On Tuesday, EU energy ministers approved an emergency plan to cut gas consumption by 15% in the coming winter. The International Energy Agency has warned Europe is facing a red alert over its gas consumption and is at risk of winter energy rationing. Jerome Hughes is a correspondent joining us from Brussels to give us the latest. Paolo Rofone is the Secretary General at the SIPPI Foundation, who also joins us from Brussels. Welcome to you both. Well, first over to you, Jerome. Tell us what you have on the latest when we're looking at this flow of gas or lack of it from Russia to Europe.
That's right, Covey. Well, we're hearing that Nord Stream 1 is running at 20% capacity. It was running, as you said in the introduction, at 40% capacity. And there is a lot of concern. There's a blame game going on between Brussels and Moscow and other capitals here in the EU. But I suppose the bigger picture is concern about what could be the end game here in all of this. We have, in terms of Western economies, are in flux at the moment. You have different sort of problems with the markets, the financial markets. You've got high inflation in the Eurozone, averaging 8.6%. The Federal Reserve in the United States is poised to increase interest rates again. And the European Central Bank here in the EU will do the same in September, after already increasing by a half of 1%. And there's a feeling, really, that these sort of the people that are managing these currencies, they're not exactly sure what's going to happen. That's the problem. We're in uncharted territory here in terms of very, very high energy prices, very high inflation. At the same time, employment, if you look at the UK, if you look at the EU, if you look at the United States, employment is actually, those figures look good. But we have to ask the question, is that just because we're coming out of the end of lockdowns? So you have high employment rates. You have a lot of people spending after they had money saved up or not being able to spend during the lockdowns. We have the summer period now, so tourism is going well. But what happens when the winter comes, when things get colder, the days get shorter, consumer sentiment goes down because people are concerned about spending money with high energy prices and so on? Are we facing into a major recession? And, you know, are we looking at a situation whereby this could be a bigger recession than the last time. And then you have young people coming out of college or university, or young people married, trying to start a family and so on. Could they be facing decades of austerity measures to try and pay back all of this money if we have another financial crisis? So, of course, energy is the key element to all of this. The war in Ukraine, of course, is the backdrop to it. But the high energy prices are pushing up inflation. The weakening of the euro against the dollar, that also pushes up inflation. And all the while, we just don't know where this is going to go.
Sure. Well, Paolo Raffone, it's almost too funny to say this, but at the same time, how sad it is in terms of the way that Europe is dealing with this. Because on the one hand, you have Europe time and again coming out saying Russia is using gas as a weapon. But as far as we have checked and as far as public knowledge and common knowledge, Europe is providing, some of the NATO countries that are European, are providing Ukraine with weapons that are meant to kill Russians. That's as far as we know, Russian soldiers. So, of course, Russia is going to come out. Of course, they have stated that they're not doing that in terms of its gas. But has Europe thought through what it is doing? After all, we just heard from our correspondent how bad Europe as a whole is doing when it comes to their respective economies.
Well, the situation is evident under the eyes of everybody. The European Union has entered a tunnel that is hitting itself in an incredible way. The decision of putting sanctions, draconian sanctions, unilaterally decided by Europe to Russia, has been something that was totally miscalculated. Moreover, they are not reaching the goal for which they were stated, which was that to weaken Russia to a point to then have it at a negotiating table from a weaker position. We see the opposite. So there has been a total miscalculation, and the political and social price of all this, as the Jerome was saying, will be seen in the next 3 to 6 months, and it will be very hard for Europe.
Indeed. Paolo Raffone there, Secretary General at the SIPPI Foundation. Thank you, Jerome Hughes. Thank you, both from Brussels. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. The U.S. Justice Department is reportedly examining former President Trump's role in last year's Capitol attack as part of the election-related criminal probe. U.S. media are citing sources as saying that federal prosecutors are questioning former White House officials about Trump's involvement in the deadly riots at the Capitol. The Congressional Committee has been holding its own hearings into the incident. The committee says Trump should be held accountable for a dereliction of presidential duty. But the panel of senators does not have the power to bring criminal charges against Trump. Therefore, any investigation by the Justice Department into the former president's personal role is very significant. Trump, however, has denied the accusations, calling them total fiction. U.S.-China tensions are heating up again over a potential visit by the U.S. House Speaker to Taiwan. Beijing has issued a fresh warning, saying that it would take countermeasures if Nancy Pelosi lands on the island.
We have repeatedly stated our solemn position that we are firmly opposed to Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. If the U.S. pushes ahead and challenges China's bottom line, it will inevitably face firm countermeasures. The U.S. side will bear all the consequences arising therefrom.
This is the latest in a series of warnings since reports emerged that Pelosi could pay a visit to Taipei during her regional tour in August. Last week, the Financial Times reported that China had alarmed the U.S. privately that the move could possibly provoke a military response. Beijing stressed that such a visit would send a wrong signal to separatist forces in Taiwan. If she arrived in Taiwan, it would be the first trip by a sitting U.S. House Speaker in over 2 decades. The plan is likely to surface during a phone call between the Chinese President Xi Jinping and his U.S. counterpart Joe Biden this week. Beijing is opposed to Washington's growing military and diplomatic ties with Taiwan, which China considers as part of its territory. powerful earthquake has rattled northern Philippines, causing damage to many buildings. At least 5 people are confirmed dead, and dozens of injuries have been reported. The 7.1 magnitude quake sent panicked residents rushing into the streets. It has damaged buildings, including heritage sites in Apra and nearby provinces, caused landslides in some areas. The tremor was even felt more than kilometers away in the capital, Manila, where several buildings were evacuated. Earthquakes are common in the Philippines, but this one was the strongest to hit in years. Seismologists say big aftershocks are expected. And that is for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفِي عَنْ قَلِيلٍ مِنْ بَلَاءِ الدُّنْيَا وَعُقُوبَاتِهَا وَمَا يَجْرِي فِيهَا مِنَ الْمَكَارِهِ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِهَا. And you know my weakness before a little of this world's tribulations and punishments, and before those ordeals which befall its dwellers. Until the part where it says, وَلَا يُخَفَّفُ عَنْ أَهْلِهِ لِأَنَّهُ لَا يَكُونُ إِلَّا عَنْ غَضَبِكَ وَانْتِقَامِكَ وَسَخَتِكَ. This tribulation is the kind whose sufferers are given no respite, since it only occurs as a result of your wrath, your vengeance, and your anger. وَهَذَا مَا لَا تَقُومُ لَهُ السَّمَاوَاتُ وَالْأَرْضُ. And these cannot be withstood by the heavens and the earth. يَا سَيِّدِي فَكَيْفَ لِي وَأَنَا عَبْدُكَ الضَّعِيفُ الذَّلِيلُ الْحَقِيرُ الْمِسْكِينُ الْمُسْتَكِينُ. O my master, so what about me? Because I am your weak, lowly, wretched, and miserable slave. Dear brothers and sisters, after discussing some of the differences between the chastisements and the punishments of this world and hereafter, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, Ya Sayyidi, fakayfa li? Wa ana abduka al-za'if, al-zalil, al-haqir, al-miskin, al-mustakin. O Allah, this is my state. I am your servant. I am your slave, but I'm weak. I'm lowly, I'm wretched, and I'm miserable. In fact, this is the logical way of talking to this absolute cause, to this most merciful Lord, after knowing, after realizing what he's capable of, after recognizing him, and after knowing what he's able to do and what he will do to those enemies of him in hereafter. What punishments are awaiting the foes of Allah in hereafter. That is how Imam Ali alayhi salam is taking shelter with Allah, like a distressed person who finds none other than Allah to place his hope in. If a supplicant's hope is divided between Allah and other than him of his creatures, then he has not attained due absorption in Allah. He has not experienced in himself the state of being desperately in need of Allah, which is a fundamental requisite for the prayers. The distressed one, the one who loses hope in all other than Allah, who takes due resort to Allah, this is the one that will talk to him like this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. Such a person has realized that the inhabitants of the hell are among the pieces of fire. Dirty clothes and heavy chains will be put on them. These people cry constantly and wish they could die, but every time they ask for death, boiling water is poured on their heads and they are beaten by heavy clubs. Blood and dirt come from their mouths, their livers cut into pieces from thirst, their eyes flow on their faces, the flesh falls from their faces, and their hair shed from their body, all because of extreme pain, and whenever their skin burns, another skin grows instead. O Lord, how can I tolerate this much difficulty and calamity while I am your weak, lowly, miserable slave?
How then can I bear the retributions and the punishments of the hereafter, which are enormous and of intensive suffering, of prolonged period and perpetual duration, and which shall never be alleviated for those who deserve the same as those retributions will be the result of your act? And your punishment, which neither the heavens nor the earth can withstand and bear, my Lord. How can I, a weak, insignificant, humble, poor and destitute creature of yours, be able to bear them?
Thank you, Allah.
Now let me hear,
feeling so good about all things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So Imam Ali alayhi salam is telling, oh Allah, I cannot tolerate this much calamity. Though my worship is not perfect, though my sins are not few, but I am your lover. I love the prophets, I love the imams, and I love worshiping you. I'm not a sinner by nature. Even if I commit sins, it is merely because of my lack of knowledge, lack of my understanding. And now you see that I'm desperately in need of you. I have no choice but to take refuge with you, Allah. I only obtain my need from you. O Allah, my excessive sins are because of my lust and carnal soul, and I'm willing to worship perfectly and sincerely. But sometimes I slip. But I hate Satan. I hate tyrants. So forgive me, help me, save me from my sins. Help me in worshipping you, and release me from the hell, and take me to paradise. So, as we mentioned, the state of being in dire need of Allah necessitates the state of total absorption in him. And this is what happens as a result. This is how the true servant talks to the Lord. Because in such a condition, a servant knows that his need lies only with Allah and not with other than him. Hence, he would turn to him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, alone, averting his face from all other than him. In this regard, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says in a supplication, "Make me among those who supplicate you with sincerity in ease with the supplication of those who are in distress." Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Sinto.
Çömen.
Yani?
Bazaar.
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy.
Hello there, and welcome to the second segment in our two-part edition of Bazaar. Last week, we discussed the knowledge-based production of potatoes in agriculture and how technology has helped expand this sector. This week, the program focuses on livestock rearing and all that goes into producing high-quality meat and dairy. Yum, yum. So stay with us as we check out their economic and national food security contributions.
Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep.
This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
...2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit. Khorasan Razavi province specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechie, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini-tubers. So what is a mini-tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production. You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production. As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging, and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines, and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high-purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
Well, I'm going to go into a several-minute silence because my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give you guys a wonderful report. Take it away.
In a world grappling with coronavirus, a significant number of health-related companies have been looking for a solution to contain the spread of the virus. With the development of various testing methods, there has been a huge spike in demand for the virus sampling kits, and especially the sampling swabs.
God, I'm just so very tired of wearing masks. But what can I say? Ever since the pandemic took the world by storm, our life has changed in an unpredictable way. One of the prominent changes is the development of sampling technology to meet the evolving need of COVID-19 testing. Today, we came to Damahi Biotechnology Company to see how the sampling swabs that we see everywhere are produced. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me.
At the start of the outbreak, most of the sampling swabs were imported into the country and the domestic supply chain had been inconsistent. For this reason, this Iranian company in biotechnology decided to take steps towards promoting local sampling swabs on a large scale. When it comes to production, the swabs are produced in two different forms: oral swabs and nasal swabs. Anyway, let's take a look at the production line.
Alright, the production process of the sampling swabs begins in this unit. At this stage, after the plastic handles are imported into this factory, they go through the swab flocking machine to form the header. Actually, when I look at it, it kind of looks like the ear cleaning swabs that we use on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, they are completely different. These headers are actually made of fibers, so it's totally something else. When the swabs are produced, they get to this stage for quality control and cleaning before they get to the packing hall. And finally, they pass through the sealer machine for pressing. But I should mention that the swabs are not finalized at this stage. They have to go through the sterilization process, and by the end of the day, the sterilized swabs are transported to different laboratories all across the country.
In case you wonder about the head of the swab, unlike how we thought earlier that it looks like the ear-cleaning swab, the foam-headed material eliminates the possibility of adhesive residue contamination. So by the end, the sterilized sampling swabs are distributed for field or home testing to meet the growing need of the country.
Even though it looks very simple, the production procedure of the sampling swabs is very complicated. Now, thanks to the development of such diagnostic tools, the world has managed to curb the pandemic in numerous ways. I've been Sarah Dema. Stay safe and bye-bye.
Many thanks for that fantastic adventure. We are almost out of time, but before we go, let's look at some news and trends in the country's agricultural industry. Here we go now. Drought is a serious issue affecting global food security as the world tries to grapple with the effects of climate change and overall global warming. Iran is also dealing with low rainfall as some of its provinces are sounding drought alarms. This is bad.
Lorestan province is one that's heavily impacted by declining seasonal rainfall. Officials say its agricultural sector has witnessed over $360 million in damages, with livestock and aquaculture suffering the most considerable losses. In addition, Iran's Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture recently released a report on the falling precipitation levels. The report lists several provinces in a critical state of water shortage, including Fars, Khorasan-Razavi and Ardabil, among others. Official estimates revealed the agriculture sector was inflicted with $2.4 billion in losses due to water shortages last year.
Venezuela is looking for ways to cooperate with Iran to strengthen the Latin American country's agriculture sector. Let's have a look.
During a visit to Iran, Venezuela's agriculture and land minister said his country is interested in transferring advanced know-how and technology from Iran. Wilma Castro-Solteldo says these mainly lay in Iran's fields of fertilizer production, biological pesticides, livestock probiotics, and aquatic animals. Soteldo added that his ministry intends to boost cooperation with Iranian knowledge-based companies to bring change to Venezuela's agriculture sector. Venezuela is a top producer of corn, coffee, cotton, and rice, among other things.
In terms of value, pistachios still wear the crown at the top of Iran's export list. And last year, around 140,000 tons of these nuts were sent off to foreign markets. Very popular they are indeed.
Nearly $1 billion worth of pistachios were purchased by 75 countries from Iran. Fresh and unprocessed pistachios were the most sought after, raking in $700 million. China, Russia, India, and the UAE were the top destinations for this agricultural product. Iran's Customs Administration, however, says exports declined last year compared to the year 2020. The administration said drought and damage to domestic pistachio productions last year caused a 30% drop in both weight and value of these exports.
Let's hope something can be done about this drought business. Anyway, that wraps up our program for today. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.